Hi, I'm Dave Summers, and welcome to AMA's Edgewise, where you will hear fresh insights from recognized thought leaders across a wide range of subject matter. AMA's Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Michael Gates-Gill had it all, but by the time he turned 60, he had lost everything except his Ivy League education and his sense of entitlement. First, he was downsized at work. Next, an affair ended his 20-year marriage. Then, he was diagnosed with a slow-growing brain tumor. Gill had no money, no health insurance, and no prospects. One day, as Gill sat in a Manhattan Starbucks, a 28-year-old Starbucks manager named Crystal Thompson approached him, half-joking, to offer him a job. With nothing to lose, he took it and went from drinking coffee in a Brooks Brothers suit to serving it in a green apron. Michael Gates-Gill is the son of New Yorker writer Brendan Gill, and he was a creative director at J. Walter Thompson Advertising, where he was employed for over 25 years. Currently, he lives in New York, within walking distance of the Starbucks store where he works, and he has no plans to retire from what he calls the best job he's ever had. This is a very compelling story.
Yes, I don't recommend anyone necessarily live it, but it was...
setting out to do that,
yes,
type
but
of thing.
At this moment, talking to you right now, I think the big surprise to me is that I'm happier than I've ever been in my life.
You know, the thing I think about that, at least personally, is people have to understand that they have to pass through those moments because there is something on the other side. Don't you think?
I didn't think so. You know, we all write stories about our life. At 60 or something, I'd reached the point where I'd written this life that I've been born and given everything with this famous father, and I've been given a Yale education. By the way, in those days, it was affirmative action in favor of anyone whose father had gone to
That's
Yale.
Right.
Then after Yale, I've been given my job at J. Walter Thompson because it was owned by a Yale man. So I've been given all this stuff. And by the time I was sitting in that Starbucks store, I thought, just writing my own story, gosh, I was given all this and now it's over.
So here you are, a new employee at Starbucks, facing the fear of failure and trying to fit in with your young, energetic staff. Can you take us through the process your manager used to develop your skills and abilities?
It was totally different than anything I would ever have done. For example, at J. Walter Thompson, basically you started at the run. The very first day, do this, and if you didn't do it, you're out. Fear motivated, I would say. Gosh, I don't want to screw up. But I was standing inside that Starbucks store at 93rd and Broadway, and I looked around. By the way, I realized I would be a minority, not only in age,
right,
but gender, race, everything. I was sort of frozen because I saw all these young people running with such speed, and I was never much of an athlete. And they were calling out these drinks like cappuccinos. And I was saying, oh, I've never been good at foreign language.
Rapid fire.
Right. My new manager, Crystal, realized that because she came over and she took me to a table and served me coffee. And she served me pastry. By the way, in 26 years at J. Walter Thompson, I'd never even imagined serving coffee to anyone who worked for me.
Right.
So I was in this world of, I think, respect and almost, you'd have to say, loving kindness. And it was a totally different way. First impressions are so powerful, right? And
I realized— You felt valued immediately.
Yeah, I felt that I was recognized and she had somehow intuited that I needed her help. But also what I discovered later was that was not unique to me. Everybody who starts at Starbucks is given that first impression of sharing coffee and pastries before you're asked to run.
It's sort of like, it's who we are.
Yeah, it's that sharing. And, you know, they say food is love. So you get a feeling for they're with me rather than in advertising. I think it's sort of like a step aside. I hope you make it. Good luck.
Now, there's a lot of discussion right now about how well or poorly members of Generation Y are fitting into the work world.
Yes.
But what about older workers like yourself?
Yes.
What are some of the challenges you faced?
You know, I've gone through this book tour and I've met thousands of people and also got thousands of emails. And what people tell me that they've gotten out of the book is what I would call the three L's. They're very simple. The first one is you have to leap with faith rather than huddle in fear. The danger after a certain age, I think, especially if you've been relatively successful like I was, is you tend to repeat yourself.
Right.
And instead of getting out of my box, I mean, I knew the box was going down like an elevator, right?
Sure.
But I would still dress up in a Brooks Brothers suit. I would still carry my—
It was your second skin.
I would still make calls to clients, even though no one was answering my phone. But one of the big lessons is leap. You can't think your way out of it. You have to just leap. That day that by accident, I happened to walk into a Starbucks store that was having what they call a hiring event, and I happened to sit down next to Crystal, and the second L is look. Look with respect, because I'd grown up in New York, and in New York, you're told, never make eye contact.
<'Cause> That's right.
You don't want to let anyone
into
your life. So it was sitting in self-pity, just focusing on my latte. But here, right next to me, was Crystal, and she looked at me, and thank goodness, she said, would you like a job? That's where the leap came over. I just said yes without thinking. Because
right.
If I'd thought about it, I would have said, no, no way I'm going to serve coffee.
Right.
And then the third L, I think, is equally important, which is listen to your heart. It was after several months of working at Starbucks, I went out on the street after closing one night and I said, you know, I'm happier than I ever was in my previous high-status job, big houses, but I was supporting
this. Was that a gradual thing to you, or was it truly almost like a cinematic moment where you walked outside and just realized, you know what? Yeah. I'm happy.
It was a shock because I didn't have any of the support system of title and income that I had. And that's the sad thing, I think, about my story. That's why I would not recommend anyone relive the whole. It took me until over 60 before I really said, what makes me happy? And what makes me happy, it turns out, is a little simpler life, not trying to support this high status, that expectations of my parents or even friends, but just serving coffee to people and having an enjoyable experience.
Right. Do you have any advice for managers considering hiring older workers?
I think the biggest change in my life is not seeing people as part of a group. For example, an advertising...
You're saying lump them all together.
Yeah, and it really depends on the individual. In other words, I would never say to anyone, hire older people necessarily, or hire younger people, or hire some race or some background or education. I think that the key from a manager's point of view, I think you have to look at every individual. But from a older person's point of view, if I could talk about my experience, you shouldn't emphasize experience. And that's the hard thing to do after you've lived for decades, right?
Right.
Because you think, gosh, I've learned so much I want to share. But experience is a non-starter because the manager you might be interviewing doesn't really want to hear about how great you were. That leads you into a discussion of the past. What you really want to do is focus on your future and focus on the future of whoever you're talking to and the company you're going to be working for. And that has excitement. The hard thing, I think, for anyone over a certain age is to forget the past and move forward with a kind of faith in the future.
That's interesting. It's not the first thing that would come to a hiring manager's perspective. And let's talk about that for a second. It isn't just the achievements, the accolades, patents, awards that are on the resume, but look for the potential within that person.
Yes. The reason Crystal said later she hired me, when Crystal said, fill out this job application, I said, I need your help. So she helped me through the job. By the way, that's another thing I never did for anyone who worked for me. Can you imagine helping someone to fill out a job application? Anyway, one of the questions was, what would you do if a guest, we call people who come in the door guests, had a problem? And I was able to say, well, the first thing I'd do was listen. So it wasn't the past experience that I'd had. I didn't even talk about 26 years as an executive. It was reaction to what might happen in the future in her store. She said, that's exactly the right answer.
Oh, that's neat.
So that's an example. In my previous life, I think I would have spent 10 minutes not even letting her get a word in edgewise. Well, I told her all about the great things I'd done.
Because you wanted to bedazzle her with how intelligent and smart you were.
Right, and I would have said, I'm an expert on consumer behavior.
Right.
And I think the other key thing, David, is being in the moment. Because so often we, in America, I think especially, we plan our lives out. We're going to work here. We're going to go to college there. The best things in life happen by accident. If you're there spontaneously... Thank goodness, out of courage or desperation, I was there that moment that Crystal gave me a chance.
Right.
And I was there in the interview. Instead of being this entitlement guy with all this great experience I wanted to deliver to her, I was listening to her and I spoke honestly. And same with the partners. One of the great gifts was they didn't treat me as an old guy coming in. They said, Mike, you can do it. My training coach was a guy named Kester, was bigger than I was, had a do-rag. We had totally different backgrounds, but he was totally confident that I could make it. He didn't give me any slack. I mean, I carried the garbage up from the basement every night, and that was a gift.
Right.
Because the other thing is we begin to think of ourselves in terms of, are we old?
Well, that's interesting, too. The idea that you came from this advertising background where people are obsessed with demographics and putting people into buckets.
Yes.
And categories. Here you are kind of pulling yourself out of that.
That's why I said that, aside from leap, was also look with respect. Because what I discovered is that Crystal and Kester had a lot of things to teach me. It sounds sad, but I would never have looked at them, literally never have made eye contact. When you look with respect at everything in life, good, bad, and different, you know how a baby sort of looks with that wonder at the world?
Oh, my gosh, it's my hand.
Right.
Exactly.
It's so exciting, sort of like being on the beach with all the different shells. In that sense, variety is the spice of life, and we categorize. I certainly did. I would say, is that person got the right education background for me to talk to? Is that person going to be helpful to me? Rather than just, here we all are, a few atoms energized together.
Exactly. Now, at J. Walter Thompson, you worked with many Fortune 500 companies that profess to put the customer first.
Yes.
Starbucks puts their partners first. Can you explain how this corporate culture is different from the norm?
It goes back to Crystal's first day, right? She came over and served me coffee.
Mm-hmm.
In my previous life, that wouldn't have computed. In the same way, they say, we got to focus first on our partners. There was a line there. She could have easily said to me, Mike, help make coffee. Instead, she served me coffee. What they do is they do an amazing amount of communications to the partners. You're given stock options and they tell you how to invest it. You're given health benefits. They tell you how to be healthy, how to see the dentist. You know, many people have never been to a dentist because they couldn't afford that first meeting. They focus on giving the partners support, and I would have to say love, and also skills.
Right.
And then they feel if they really support the partners will be able to interact cheerfully with the guests.
Because they know they're taken care of.
Right. It's that security that Crystal and other people are working with you. And by the way, it's very egalitarian. The manager also makes drinks. The manager also helps clean up. It's not like there's a hierarchy. In some corporations, it got very hierarchical. It's much more fun to treat it more like a sport where everybody...
It could be a lot more spontaneous.
Exactly.
You value the team that much more.
Right. And I think also in the Fortune 500 companies, and it's not that they're evil or anything, but you get into that rigid thing we were talking about before. You know, when you think of your best friends, you don't think what title do they have or how much money they had. You don't think in categories. You think in terms of some laughter and enjoyment you had together.
Right.
And this is a lesson I learned, which is those little moments, don't let them go, because the little moments can be the way not only for your own happiness, but to be able to share happiness with others. And I think too often we try to plan our life. So
it's
like tennis where they say, just enjoy the shot. Because if you start thinking about where the ball is going to go, in other words, don't be so self-conscious.
Right.
Be conscious instead of self-conscious.
Another thing that occurs to me, and I reflect on it a lot, is this idea that opportunities occur and pass by you. And I equate it to sort of windows opening. Are you going to jump through that window or are you not? And they're different for everybody.
That's why it's leap with faith. You know, I was huddling in fear literally for years. So if you leap with faith, I think then you might call it angel of mercy, like Crystal or someone else is able to help you. Also, if you listen to your heart, that will guide you on what you should do. Because if you're doing something you love, then there won't be any bad outcomes.
Exactly. Now, as this baby boom generation reaches retirement age and they face buyouts and layoffs and all these other things that are happening right now, many people will face the situation that you were in. What advice do you have for them?
Well, it sounds a little dramatic, but it was really helpful that I was diagnosed with a brain tumor. It wasn't a terminal tumor, but the surgeon wanted to operate right away.
Sure.
It sounded grim. But it did remind you the precious gift that life is. And obviously, everybody, I would say, is going to be fired some way. Everyone's going to be laid off. No one is ever totally secure in life. So what you should do, I think, is instead of fighting that, I used to try to be a master of the universe and control people and control their happiness and what they were buying. And it's such a gift to just say, hey, I'm not master of this universe. I'm going to surrender. And if there's a rising tide, I'd like to ride it.
Exactly.
And that whole philosophy of not trying, once again, to be in control, because at the end of the day, there is no control. We're all gone.
It's a very Zen thing.
But actually, you know, it's so practical.
Absolutely.
Because if you give up that feeling of you got to control everybody and everything, then you can participate much more fully in the moment.
Sure.
So many gifts are given to us in life that we hurry by because we're not in the moment and not open to really letting them happen for us. Just like Tom Hanks calling me to say he wants to play me in a movie.
Exactly.
And the reason I think he said he wanted to do it, and Gus Van Sant, I did talk to, was going to direct it. And he said what appealed to both of them, and it happened within days. He said usually they get thousands of scripts, takes months, but within days they decided they both really wanted to do this. And the reason is after a certain age, you begin to feel maybe there are new things.
Right.
And the story of my life, I didn't plan it this way, but the story of my life really is there can be a whole new life that you could never plan, just to go back to that point.
Sure.
But if you're open to a spontaneous happy accident, you can become happier than you've ever been.
What's the biggest life lesson you've learned from working at Starbucks?
The biggest lesson for me is just that the real measure of success is not these external measures of big houses, which I had, and big jobs, but really to put your hand on your heart and say, are you happy? You as a unique individual, because I think that we're all meant to find our own unique way of happiness, and it's not like somebody else's. So I think the courage to trust and listen to your own heart is really the key to becoming happy.
It's very inspiring, and at the same time, it's neat that it weaves Starbucks into the whole thing. The title of the book is How Starbucks Saved My Life, A Son of Privilege Learns to Live Like Everyone Else, and the author is Michael Gates Gill. And Michael, thank you so much for being with us today.
I should say one more thing, that if I wasn't drinking coffee, I don't know whether I would be so stimulated and excited.
What are you drinking today?
Today I'm drinking 3 shots of espresso on ice in a venti cup. because it's a little warm today. But I love Sumatra. I love all the different varieties of coffee. And the other discovery for me was that I can play a role because I love history and coffee. So I can help the guests understand all the different kinds of coffee from all the different places. So once again, there was a whole different dimension. I didn't go in expecting that, but it happened to be part of the things I love to do.
Michael, I'm going to run out of this room and go buy some coffee. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Just remember, we really need your feedback. So please drop us an email at podcast@amanet.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That number again is 800-697-3406. For more information on our executive conference centers and seminars, please visit our website, www.amanet.org. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.